Hi, I'm Ira Glass. You're listening to the Cosmopolitan Hour, VEGN, the International Radio. Okay, so on today's episode, we hear from two vegan feminists who have a lot on their mind. Erica and Jordan are going to be taking a look at feminism in the media, as well as body image, infidelity, and Mormonism. All this plus bon mi. Title of this week's edition is episode 36. I'm Ira Glass. Stay tuned.
So that was Ira Glass introducing the Cosmopolitan Hour.
Yeah, it was.
It's very nice of him to
take
time out of his busy schedule.
He is. He's a busy guy. He's got the radio show, the TV show. And, yeah.
He's got to promote his line of BMX accessories.
Right.
Extreme sports gear and nutrition supplements.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's got a busy schedule, that guy. So.
Yeah. So thanks, Ira.
So thank you, yes. So we're back after a hiatus in which Erica converted to Mormonism and...
Fundamentalist Mormonism, actually.
Pardon me.
I'm now the fifth wife of the 72-year-old prophet. And, I only came back to say goodbye to you apostates and sinners. I'll be laughing at you while you burn in hell. Have fun.
That doesn't seem very... I want to say Christian, but are Mormons Christian? They're not really Christian. Oh, are they?
Oh, yeah. Okay. They're into the whole Jesus thing.
They just also believe in the guy who's in America who...
Yeah, who spoke into a hat.
Right.
The South Park episode that talks about Mormonism is actually pretty thorough and, sure, it's biased, because they keep referring to Mormonism as dumb, But it's a pretty accurate history of kind of the history of Mormonism, basically, to give it in a very condensed space. Joseph Smith claims to have been dictated a third testament of the Bible by the angel Moroni, or Moroni. And
it's a funny name for an angel.
Yeah. I think it's ironic that you can't spell it without moron. Just saying. And apparently the angel told him where he could find a special seeing stone. Or no, it was gold tablets. And he put the gold tablets into a hat and looked into the hat. And in the dark, the gold tablets, like, shone. And he was therefore able to dictate the third testament of the Bible. And, it just goes downhill from there.
That sounds like a firm foundation to build a religion on. I mean, at least as firm as writing a... series of science fiction novels.
Yes, exactly. I see a lot of strong parallels between these two very American religions.
Yeah. I think that Scientologists tend to be a bit better dressed, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they're richer. They're all Hollywood celebrities. Whereas, you know, the Mormons, what celebrities do they have after Donnie and Marie? And Mitt Romney.
I don't think they have any, do they?
Exactly.
Well.
That's right.
Well played. Well played.
Pazuzu got hair in my water. Gross.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'm used to it.
So we are back with
yes.
many important things to discuss.
Yes. All of which escape me right now.
Yeah, me too.
So new Bristol Palin anti-pregnancy ad.
Really?
What are your thoughts? You haven't seen it?
I haven't seen the new one.
It pretty much sums up like... you shouldn't get pregnant as a teenager if you're poor. But I'm lucky. I mean, I can see it both ways. Like, I can see the critic's point of view, and I can also see that people think it's a really good public service announcement or whatever. But she's basically saying, like, what if I didn't have a famous family? What if I didn't have all the advantages that I had? And, you know, what if I couldn't finish school and blah, blah, blah?
What if I didn't come from a famous family? What if I didn't have all their support? What if I didn't have all these opportunities? Believe me.
And then it shows her, like, in an empty, decrepit house with her baby and, like, no furniture. And she's like, it wouldn't be pretty.
It wouldn't be pretty.
And then she says, pause before you play.
Pause before you play.
Oh my god. Okay.
So in one hand, you know, she's kind of saying, like, she's acknowledging her privilege. But on the other hand, it's kind of like saying, Well, I kind of messed up, but it's okay, because, you know, I've got a famous mom, and we have money, and, you know, shit was taken care of. Right. But you shouldn't, because you're poor, and you're probably not white like me.
Right. Well, that sounds about right to me. I just think that it's pretty... It's just such a manipulative thing of the pro-abstinence and... Mm-hmm. And those kinds of right-wing agenda movements to do. The pro-life movement does it as well, where they find somebody who has not followed their
yes.
ideals, like who has had an abortion or who has mm-hmm. Or who has had premarital sex, and then they get them to come on the record and say that it was such a big mistake and they wish they hadn't done it. And,
yeah.
Oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. And really, it just means that, like, I guess, doesn't that water down their message a little bit? Because, I mean, if you can be, like, an abortion-having, mm-hmm. sex-having, you know, sinner and still be a pro-lifer and everything else, then, I mean, it seems like that's kind of, you know, that takes some of the teeth out of the messages.
I suppose, but I can see how they might think, you know, we're not just talking out of our ass. We have people who are actually right. there and right. who actually regret these decisions they made.
Right.
But yeah, I totally agree that, you know, the majority, well, not, maybe not the majority, but, well, I'd be bold and say, yeah, the majority of people who are anti-abortion or, you know, anti-premarital sex are people who have actually gone and done that themselves. And they're basically saying, do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah, I just think that both of those things are, like, not very realistic, not realistic ideals to live by 100% mm-hmm. of the time. I'm all for, you know, kids abstaining from sex and everything. You know, like, if you're 12,
yeah. then...
I mean, maybe there's some 12-year-olds who are ready, but for the most part, I think that it's probably safe to say that 12-year-olds are probably better off abstaining. But, I mean, I don't know, this whole... I'm not making sense. I'm in, like, a food coma.
Yeah, we just had amazing banh mi.
Yes, they were very
so good.
So good.
And they were only $3.25.
Yes.
That's madness.
Best deal in the city. But I guess, yeah, like, if your cause has to be propped up by a bunch of people who couldn't stick to
yeah.
your, like, unrealistic and overly rigid ideals, then
yeah.
maybe your cause isn't one that needs to be fought for.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So there.
Bam.
Indeed.
On the subject of sex.
Yes. How is it with the prophet, by the way?
Oh, it's incredible. It's mind-blowing.
What do you get, like, every second Tuesday of the month
yeah.
or something?
Yeah, exactly. But only until I'm pregnant, and then it's a sin.
Is it really? Do Mormons believe that
having
sex
yeah.
when you're pregnant is a sin? Wow.
Yeah. In the book I read, there was a woman... the creepy thing about the fundamentalist church, and that's... I should make a distinction that... Although I think... All religions are ridiculous, and the entire concept of Mormonism is ridiculous. Mainstream Mormons are not polygamists, and they are, for the most part, nice people who maybe believe something that I think is a little crazy, but it's the fundamentalist Mormons who are polygamists, and there's only about 40,000 of them. And on my trip, I actually drove through Colorado City, which is, I think, the biggest... fundamentalist Mormon city in America, and I saw the women in prairie dresses with their hair in the big poofs in front and the French braids in back, and it was horrifying. But yeah, in the book I read by John Krakauer, Under the Banner of Heaven, which is an excellent read and I recommend it to everybody, he interviews a few people who were kicked out of the fundamentalist church, and in Colorado City, where we drove through, the United Effort Plan, which is the name of that particular fundamentalist sect, which is Warren Jeffs' sect, mm-hmm. They own all the property in the town. So if you sin against the church, they can just kick you out of your house.
Wow.
And they can, if you're a man and you're an apostate, they'll reassign your wives to another man, and they'll take your children from you, and they'll literally, like, kick you out of town because they own the entire town.
They'll reassign your... How does
yeah.
that work? I mean, how is that
yeah.
religiously... sound, taking away one man's wives and giving them to someone else?
Well, they really believe that, you know, the people that are running the town are divinely ordained by God to be a prophet. Wow. So, you know, they don't question the wisdom of that. And if they do, then they become apostates and they are kicked out of the church. And they had an interview with a woman in, I believe, in the Canadian FLDS city called Bountiful, which is just across the border in British Columbia. I think it's right across the border from either Idaho or Montana. I forget which one. But it's right there on the border. And the author interviewed a woman who'd been, who was an apostate of the FLDS church. And it was kind of like a witch hunt thing where she didn't get along with her father's other wife. And so this other wife accused her of having sex with her husband while she was pregnant. And that was enough for her to come under serious scrutiny. Yeah.
Yikes.
So having sex while you're pregnant is a sin, because sex is only for procreation. And if you're already pregnant, then, you know, there's no point in watering the crops. You know what I'm saying?
Right. It's not like dogs where they can get pregnant by different
exactly
fathers at the same time.
But speaking of sex,
I just
totally don't give a shit, and I'm so fucking sick and tired of hearing and seeing and reading about famous people having affairs. Like, everywhere we went, you know, we don't have TV, so being in hotels and going to bars and restaurants was kind of like the first exposure we'd had to TV in a while for us. Mm-hmm. And the news everywhere was either about Jesse fucking James and Sandra fucking, you know, white bread boring ass Bullock, or Tiger Woods, and oh my god, he's playing golf again. How can he? Will he explode into a ball of fire when he takes his 5-iron out of his caddy's bag? Like, who gives a shit? I mean, goddamn. I mean, it's kind of shitty that they did that to their spouses, if that's, you know, if their spouses weren't aware of that and it wasn't like a consensual open marriage thing. Mm-hmm. But Jesus Christ, is it none of my fucking business?
Yeah.
And I'm kind of insulted that they keep pushing this on me. Like, you should care about this man sticking his penis in a woman's vagina, and it's not his wife! What? Like, I just don't fucking care, and I shouldn't care. And people who do care shouldn't care unless they are directly involved in the matter. And that is all I have to say.
Well said. I actually have things to say on the matter as well. And that is, I've really noticed that there's a really big trend towards, everybody's really obsessed with finding out who the mistress is, you know?
Yeah.
Like John Edwards' mistress.
Oh, right,
was. She was featured in GQ, and now she's going
posing sexily with her little toddler's plush toys.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird. And, gross.
Totally weird. And then she's going on Oprah and stuff like that, and then, you know, there's been tons and tons and tons of press on all the women that Tiger Woods supposedly slept with, and now this latest one, what's her name, Michelle Bombshell, is this target of all of this scrutiny and media attention and everything else, and it's really pissing me off, you know.
Yeah.
Like I got into a fight on the Huffington Post the other day.
Easy to do.
True, but
there's some fucking idiots on there.
That is also true. But there was a clip of Tina Fey, who was on Saturday Night Live.
Uh-huh.
And again,
oh, was it like, that women's news clip?
Yeah, it was.
I just watched that last night. Yeah.
And so basically, it's Tina Fey.
I was kind of appalled by that. I was like, Tina.
Yeah, there was some good stuff in there. I mean, there was some really funny stuff. But I mean, for one, I think that saying that it is, you know, a women's news item to even a, you know, like a comedic mm-hmm. women's news item, just saying that it is something that women are interested in, mm-hmm. even in a funny way, you know, the mistresses in these
yeah.
cases of infidelity, like, you know, it seems a lot of women take this stand like it's this sort of show of solidarity or sisterhood. Like, right. We wouldn't do this to another woman. It's like, right. Yeah, maybe you wouldn't. But it's still the man who broke the marriage vows. I mean, the woman who cheats or who has a relationship with a married man is by and large a scumbag. you know, accepting, of course, open relationships where everything is consensual and you know, rare cases like Dan Savage talks about sometimes where, you know, there's an ill spouse and this is kind of, you know, having a few discreet affairs is what allows the husband or the partner to stay in the marriage and take care of, you know, whatever. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, selfish, shitty affairs. It's not the mistress that really should bear the brunt of the responsibility. I mean, yes, it was shitty. No, I would not sleep with a married man if I were single. I would never in a million years consider it. But it just, I don't understand this fixation on it. And so Tina Fey took her women's news thing and took an opportunity to just, like, swing her bat at Michelle Bombshell, who, if you don't know because you've lived under a rock for the past
month and a half,
is a tattoo model.
Oh my god.
So I don't know what that means. She has a bunch of tattoos. I don't know if if tattoo artists use her as a canvas and then she gets paid, or if she's just a model with tattoos.
I think tattoo model is just a made up phrase created by the, you know, entertainment news industry because they couldn't, you know, fit her in some box.
That's probably.
She looks to me like she's like a fetish model or, you know, like alternative pinup kind of thing.
Yeah, that and
Suicide Girls or some shit like that.
That seems to be what she's into. And, you know, like a lot of her tattoos are pretty shitty and some of them are apparently white power tattoos, which not cool.
No.
But Tina Fey said something along the lines of, when your body looks like a seventh grade boy's trapper keeper, it doesn't bode well.
A seventh grade dirtbag's trapper keeper.
It doesn't bode well for your moral character.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love Tina Fey. I really do. I think that she's a really smart, talented, and usually really thoughtful woman. But that really pissed me off.
Yeah.
Because it's a woman taking a swing at another woman based on her appearance and her body, which is shitty, you know? If you take umbrage with what Michelle Bombshell did, then you can, you know, there are lots of things that you could say that don't involve, you know, calling her a shithead because of the way she looks.
Yeah.
You know, it's stupid and it's beneath all of us, but especially beneath Tina Fey. And
exactly.
Second, since when are tattoos an indicator of character?
Yeah.
In any way. I mean, I'm sorry, but we're
biased, but yeah.
we are biased, but I mean, that's such an ignorant thing to say in this day and age, especially.
Well, it's a cheap laugh. I mean, I don't know that Tina Fey necessarily even believes it, but it was just a real cheap shot.
I would hope
and
not.
Frankly, you know, I think you'd agree with me here that Tina can do way better than that.
Yeah, she can. I think that there's lots of women's news articles and items that could have been a lot better than that. It was it was a cheap shot, and it made women like me who love Tina Fey and who are well educated, and I think I have pretty good moral character. Yeah. I've never cheated on anybody. I have never slept with any married men. I have committed no crimes. I don't know. No major crimes, I suppose. I suppose I shoplifted a few candies when I was 10, but
scumbag.
That was before I had tattoos, so what does that say? My character drastically improved once I got tattoos.
Shoplifting candy is a gateway to tattoos. I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I've been thinking for a while now that I've been kind of disappointed in Tina Fey lately.
Really?
And I remember watching that clip last night of the women's news and being really upset by it, because it just seemed like, you know, she used this platform of, like, women's news to basically call a bunch of other women whores.
Yeah.
And she used the word whore a couple times, and I don't know if she used the word slut, but, you know, that's the whole theme she was going for. It was like, let's take this women's interest piece and use it to bash a bunch of other women and call them whores.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically use the language of the patriarchy in you know, shaming women for having sex.
Yeah.
When really this whole thing is none of our fucking business. But yeah, I was kind of disappointed in the episode as a whole.
I haven't seen the whole thing. I just saw that.
There's a sketch, because the whole thing was really just not funny. And I was kind of sad because I was looking forward to seeing Tina Fey on Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. There was basically a lot of, there was actually a really good sketch where she did Palin, of course.
Right.
But there was a sketch because the musical guest was Justin Bieber, who I guess is like this 12-year-old teeny bopper sensation. And it was really supremely creepy. And if the gender roles had been reversed, it would not have aired.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically like, she's this lonely, frustrated teacher, kind of a, you know, Mrs. Krabappel character.
Mm-hmm.
And all her kids are brats. And then Justin Bieber's playing a kid who's like really thoughtful and considerate. And he obviously has a crush on her. And they keep breaking to these musical interludes where he's like singing like a, you know, a romance song to her. And she's like slowly falling in love with him. And I was like, this is gross, you know? Like, she's like late 30s, early 40s, kind mm-hmm. of. And he's, you know, and he's not just an actor portraying like a 12, 13-year-old boy. He is a 12, 13-year-old boy. And they're playing this situation, which is basically like child molestation and a huge abuse of power and authority. Mm-hmm. They're playing this situation off for laughs.
Right.
Which, you know, if it were a male teacher and a female student, that would be totally off limits.
Right.
And it's not like this has never happened. I mean, like, Mary Kay Letourneau is probably right. the most famous instance, but there's been a spate in recent years of female teachers having totally inappropriate relationships with underage boys.
Right.
And, you know, even if they're not underage, even if they're, like, college students, it's still fairly inappropriate to be mm-hmm. carrying on a sexual relationship with your student, at least while they're your current student.
Yeah.
And especially if they're underage. So, yeah, that really icked me out. I thought they could have done way better than that. But also, 30 Rock has been kind of annoying me lately. Like, there's been some really vaguely racist stuff.
Really?
Yeah, like, there was one recent episode where, like, the receptionists that all work in her dentist office are all Jamaican ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And she's having some, like, anesthesia-induced vision where all her ex-boyfriends are in the waiting room. And they're all mm-hmm. these white guys, but they're all speaking with this Jamaican patois kind of thing. And I was like, this just feels wrong. This isn't right. I don't know. And, there have been a couple other instances that I don't recall right now, but yeah, the last couple times I've watched 30 Rock, I'm like, this isn't okay. Tina, you can do better.
And that's the kind of thing. I mean, it's one thing if she was a less smart, less mm-hmm. kind of in tune woman, but she's so smart.
Mm-hmm.
And she's clearly, you know, she's given lots of interviews where she talks about being a feminist and uh-huh. how she believes in all that stuff. And I guess at rock bottom, it's an issue of a woman in a position of power, you know, mm-hmm. and influence and everything. And instead of using that to kind of build up her cause or whatever, it seems like she's trying to assert some kind of feminist ideal by tearing down somebody else. And yeah. that really pisses me off. I've never liked it when somebody has to reaffirm their own belief in something by making somebody else look stupid.
Yeah, totally. You
know? And it's, you know, you don't have to call Michelle Bombshell a whore to be a good feminist
yeah.
or to, you know, to demonstrate sisterhood with your fellow women or whatever else. It's just kind of, it's yeah, it's disappointing and, mm-hmm. and alienating to people who don't necessarily fit into Tina Fey's apparent, ideal of what a woman mm-hmm. should look like.
Yeah. And that reminded me of the other thing I wanted to talk about with Tina Fey. I read a great article and the good and bad thing about Google Reader is I can finally like keep up to date with all the blogs that I really like. And I'm like, oh man, this is so awesome and important and it'll make me smart to read this. And, with Google Reader, I actually do read it because if I'd actually go to the website, that's just too much effort and I don't
right.
remember to do it. but then the bad part is like, I can never remember where I read that amazing, great thing. but I think it was on Feministing, mm-hmm. Where somebody had a really thoughtful article about how Tina Fey's character on 30 Rock, Liz Lemon, is kind of made the butt of jokes by being called, like, ugly and fat, but she's neither. Like, she is clearly neither. Like, you know, Tina Fey and, you know, by association, Liz Lemon, you know, they're... She's a really conventionally attractive woman. You know, you can't stick a pair of glasses on somebody and call them ugly. It just doesn't work that way. And I'm not saying that because I wear glasses. I'm saying it because, you know, Tina Fey is not ugly just because she wears glasses. And she is not fat. She is far from fat. And, you know, I appreciate that they play up the food obsession on 30 Rock because, you know, it's nice to have a female character that isn't always like... watching her weight and having little salads and, you know, and they make jokes at her expense about how she, you know, can inhale a sandwich in 5 seconds or less. And, you know, like there's an episode where she gets up and she sleep eats. Like she orders a pizza in her sleep and eats it all while she's still asleep. Like, I find that funny because it kind of explodes these traditional feminine ideals. Right. But at the same time, they use that as the setup for fat jokes when it's like, no. Sorry, she's not fat. I mean, maybe...
Yeah.
I don't know if she eats that much in real life and she has really high metabolism, or she just thinks that if she ate that much, she would be fat. But either way, she's not fat, and she's not ugly. And I think there's... I think Tina Fey is intelligent enough and talented enough to be able to create humor around those insecurities that women have, mm-hmm. that they're fat and ugly, without actually... without actually insulting people by putting this totally conventionally beautiful and thin woman on screen and saying, oh, look how fat and hideous and ugly she is. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because I know that the first time that I watched the show and they made those kinds of comments, I was like, what? Like, who are they talking to? Like, who are they talking about?
Yeah.
And then I kind of eventually just, I guess you're just asked to suspend your disbelief.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird, I guess, but, yeah, I know what you mean, and, I guess this is going to be a feminist episode today.
Excellent. Well, aren't they all feminist episodes?
Yeah,
because we're such awesome feminists.
I suppose so. But I guess I'm going to use that as a segue to talk about the piece that I read on, the blog Shapely Prose. Today, and a lot of people have been linking to it and everything lately, and it's a really interesting and well-written piece. It's the author is I assume a woman of size, and she writes about her inner skinny person and how, you know, for a long, long time she wasn't able to accept herself as a fat person because she kept thinking, you know, well, when I lose weight, then I will be more outgoing, or then I'll have the confidence to travel to another country and not be scared that, you know, they don't speak English, or then I'll have the confidence to ask out a hot guy, or then I'll have, you know, and she talked about, you know, how she, you know, she was kind of intellectually down with the idea of fat acceptance and everything, but she, for herself, there was so much more tied up with being thin than just being thin.
Right.
It wasn't just that she wanted to lose weight to be thin. It's that she thought that being thin would make her this completely other person. And so she talks about, she says that, you know, this is a really sticky situation to be in for women who are overweight or not, who just, for anybody who thinks that they are not, that they're not at their ideal size.
Uh-huh.
And she says that, her main point is basically that the important thing is to, try and attain all those goals that you have tied up with being thin without sweating the actual being thin.
Right.
She's saying, you know, you can be confident and travel to other countries and ask out hot guys and do all this stuff without the weight loss.
Uh-huh.
And part of why she says that, you know, you should do this without the weight loss is because she says that it's virtually impossible to sustainably lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of where I thought that the article went a little bit wrong. And because I totally agree with everything that she said kind of up to that point. You know, I know how it feels to put things off for unrelated reasons.
Right.
You know, for me, it was always kind of like, well, when you have money, then you can do this.
Yeah.
And then you can do that. And then you can feel this way. And then you can be, when you're a, you know, when you've got your music degree, or when you've got your law degree, or when, whatever. And it, living like that just makes you unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
It's important, I think, for everybody to try and live in the here and now and be happy with what they have and work with what they have and everything else. But I thought it was really strange how this woman was basically saying that, you know, you could do anything, you know, like it's
mm-hmm.
like it's easier to develop confidence or to
mm-hmm.
overcome, you know, your own personality by doing something like asking out a hot guy when you're apparently too shy to
mm-hmm.
ever ask people out, than it is to lose weight. And it just, that seemed like a really strange thing to say.
You can do everything you set your mind to, except lose weight.
Except lose weight, yeah. And, you know, I'm for the most part, I believe that people can do most things that they set their minds to. But I would include losing weight in that. The thing that I would say differently from her, I guess, is that, you know, in the end, I think a lot of times you have to, instead of admitting that losing weight is impossible, I think it's probably healthier for everybody involved to kind of say, well, is it worth it? I mean, yeah, you can lose weight by dieting and exercising and radically changing your life. And for some people that takes, you know, like it's a huge deal. It's a huge
mm-hmm.
undertaking. They don't get to eat really what they want.
Yeah.
They have to work out every day. And that's a big commitment. And I think that a lot of people eventually come to a place where they say, you know, I think I'd rather have that extra 20 pounds or whatever
mm-hmm.
than do the work every single day, than put in, you know, two hours a day or 3 hours a day to be 20 pounds thinner.
Mm-hmm.
Thinner. It's not worth it. So
whatever.
And I'm all for that kind of thing, but it just really seemed so bizarre to me that this woman seemed to think that it would be, you know, like a woman with an IQ of 90 could become an astrophysicist easier than she could lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
Right.
And it's not that, you know, it's not that I'm saying everybody should want to be thin, everybody should be thin, but it just seems like we pin so much significance on the weight thing that
uh-huh.
we don't pin on other issues.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm sure that the woman with the IQ of 90 could engage in all kinds of unhealthy studying behaviors and, you know, cramming and basically taking a disordered approach to studying and
mm-hmm.
learning and her career and become an astrophysicist. But that's not really any healthier than somebody who is, you know, who is built a little bit bigger, dieting and spending 14 hours a day counting calories to get down
Definitely.
To a size 2.
I totally saw an episode of Law and Order like that this week.
Really?
Yeah.
Someone was a studying disordered person?
Yeah. And she studied so hard that she went crazy and killed her roommate at the elite Manhattan boarding school. But I digress.
Yeah. But, I mean, what we talked about this a little bit earlier in the day, but what do you think? I mean, I'm often accused of not being allowed to have an opinion on this stuff because I'm not a woman of size, so
shut your mouth. Well, I think I appreciate what that author was trying to say, and I haven't read this piece, so, you know, I don't want to sound too authoritative on it, but it seems like I think what a lot of people writing these kind of articles need to realize is that what advice might specifically apply to them and be of aid to them in overcoming their own personal issues isn't necessarily something that can be broadcast in such a specific form to everybody else. And, you know, like in her instance, it might be really healthy for her to say, like, I can do just about anything I set my mind to except, you know, losing this weight, because that's just not realistic and it's a waste of my time. And that's, you know, for her, that might work.
Yeah.
But for everybody else,
it might work.
But for to say that, you know, to make that kind of blanket statement and have it, you know, assume that it applies to everybody is I don't want to say irresponsible, but, you know, I think it might be kind of counterproductive, because I feel like where she's coming from is such a good place, where you're like, where you're saying, you know, your appearance is not your highest priority. You're, you know, enriching yourself and doing what you want to do with your life, and, you know, being the most you can be, and not hinging all your aspirations on one seemingly unattainable goal, is the best thing for you. I think that's probably how she should have phrased it, rather than nobody can lose weight and everybody can be an astronaut.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's kind of the thing. I mean, it's, and it was just so deliberately phrased not to say, you know, it's a waste of most people's time to bother to worry about this stuff. Which I guess I might even quibble with, because I know, you know, like some people want to lose weight for their health, and they do, and they feel really good.
Yeah.
And I certainly would not tell them that that was like a stupid endeavor or a waste of their time. But, oh, I totally lost my train of thought. But yeah, it just seems, it seems like a better framework to kind of take this whole thing would be to say, you know, everybody has limitations. You know, a person who is thin might have, you know, limitations in all kinds of other areas that a person who is larger might not. And the thing that you want to concentrate are the things that you can change, not beat your head against the brick wall of things that you can't. Whether that means that if you're a person who just really can't lose weight without 14-hour-a-day vigilance, then maybe that's a brick wall that you want to stop beating your head against. Or if you're, you know, if you're a 90-pound person with an IQ of 65, maybe you just want to stop beating your head against the brick wall of trying to get admitted to Harvard Law or something. You know, like, there's just, everybody has things that they can't change, and that, and, you know, I think it's a very positive message to say that for the things that you can't change, you know, when you realize it, it allows you to concentrate on the things that you can and become a much more fulfilled person and everything, and that's great.
It's just like that Alcoholics Anonymous prayer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I've been accidentally spouting propaganda for AA without realizing it. But no, I mean, it just seems like, it seems sometimes like the fat positive movement in particular does this maybe more than others, where I don't know, it seems like people are almost encouraged to give up on one aspect of themselves.
Right.
And, you know, as opposed to things like IQ and, you know, or like physical disability or anything like that, weight can be changed to an extent. I mean, generally more so than, you know, if you were born with one arm or something like that. So I don't know. It was kind of a, I guess I see articles like that getting passed around the internet, and I think that it was a good article and everything, but I think that people are so willing to take that kind of stuff at its at its face and just kind of be like, right on, you know?
Yeah.
I don't have to be skinny to be happy, and it's like, yeah, you don't. You absolutely don't, and that is a great message, but I think it's important to examine the rest of what's going on there, too, because I think sometimes everybody is so scared to think critically about any kind of fat positive thought, especially if it's feminist.
Hey, don't scratch your claws on my laptop case, you hellion. Get off.
Let me remove that cat for you. Kazoo.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's a pretty strong backlash, which is totally understandable because, you know, how even as empowered as the fat positive movement is now, you know, how much do they still have to fight against?
Oh, yeah.
Like, how prevalent is fat hate in our culture to this day? And you know, obsession over body image.
Yes.
So it's understandable that the logical reaction to that would be like, fuck that, I don't give a shit what I look like, and, you know, I'm not going to change a fucking thing, which is awesome.
Yes.
But at the same time, it shouldn't be like, nobody should give a shit about how much they weigh or how they look, which, you know, for, like, I agree with, like, 95% of that, but, yeah, if you, you know, if it's, like, seriously unhealthy, or it's just something you want to do for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, to feel healthy and happy and, you know, whatever, then, you know, I don't necessarily think people should be discouraged from doing that.
No, no, and I don't think that should be seen as necessarily a betrayal of the fat positive movement or the size positive movement. So, yeah, I guess I just wanted to talk about that because it was kind of something that, that made me think a little bit.
Yes.
Sorry, the
we're
cat
getting a is, cool glare from behind the
getting,
TV.
We're getting stared at from behind the television down. Screen.
You want to go? You want to bring this?
You better watch out. She will. She's going to bring it right to your laptop case.
She's doing it again. You are so evil. You are aptly named after a devil. Get out of here.
Yes.
Get out of here. Clumsy ass.
So what other feminist topics can we talk about and hopefully elicit hate mail? What has been, I feel like this has been actually kind of a big week for feminism.
Hmm.
And now I can't think of anything.
Well, the Mormon Church had their leadership summit in Salt Lake City this weekend.
Yeah? Was that a big feminist event?
I don't think it was.
You're kidding. There aren't lots of feminist Mormons out there?
But we drove by and we saw lots of crazy, like, born-agains with brandishing signs about how Mormonism was wrong. And I had to have a little laugh. I was like, ha, you're all wrong. And then we drove. And we left. But not before getting delicious vegan pastries in Salt Lake City.
Yes, I'm very jealous of those delicious vegan pastries.
I kind of have to eat my words because I used to hate Utah, and especially hate Salt Lake City, and now I kind of love it. And driving through Salt Lake City, I was like, I could totally see myself living in a little house here.
Yeah, I do that every time I go someplace. Yeah. I'm like, I could live here. I feel like I'm probably really easy.
Yeah. But yeah, Salt Lake City has it has one 100% vegan bakery up in Bountiful, which is just north of Salt Lake City. Not to be confused with Bountiful, British Columbia.
Right.
Which is the polygamist colony.
The polygamist town, yes.
And then there is another bakery in Salt Lake City that's like 90% vegan and so amazing. And then there's a ton of vegan stuff that, like, I didn't even scratch the surface of all the vegan restaurants and stuff in Salt Lake City. And there's a huge active gay scene in Salt Lake City.
Really?
A number of their elected politicians are openly gay.
Huh.
Seems like there's a pretty good music scene, underground music scene in Salt Lake City. Yeah, I was kind of surprised. Pleasantly surprised. It was great.
what about their punk scene from the movie?
Oh, gosh.
SLC Punk. That acclaimed master
critically acclaimed. I don't know. I didn't see too many punk rockers. I saw a few tattooed people, but you know, I think it's mostly hipsters at this point.
Right.
But it's funny like you should bring that. Yeah, it's funny you should bring up that movie because I think that movie probably ranks only second behind the Doom Generation on my list of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire fucking life.
Really?
Yeah. And SLC Punk was one of them.
Yeah, it was a
that movie, I just remember the line, only posers die, man. Only posers die.
You know, I think Mike actually might have that movie.
I would not be surprised.
I would love to watch that again, actually.
Oh, man.
Only posers die.
Yeah. That was after his friend OD'd. And I can't remember if it was like his friend was straight edge and then somebody like drugged him secretly or if I forget what happened. Who fucking cares? That movie sucked.
Now I want to watch it again.
Matthew Lillard sucks. He sucks. I saw a really funny ad once that was, I guess, in this political bullshit business that is Hollywood, you know, part of actors' contracts or, like, movie contracts is that they have to have a certain amount of promotion and, like, push for awards and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So even if a movie is, like, totally shit, like, laughably crap, like, they're still contractually obliged to kind of push for award recognition.
Right.
And there was actually an ad from Variety magazine that said, "For your consideration, Matthew Lillard, Best Supporting Actor in Scooby-Doo." And I thought that was, like, the most amazing thing ever. This is why I hate L.A.
That is kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of love that.
Yeah. I'm going to start writing that into all my contracts from now on.
I think you should. I would like to nominate you for best co-host.
Thank
of a
you.
Podcast.
I'm going to throw you under the bus and not nominate
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's fine. I wouldn't nominate me either. Speaking of podcasts.
Yes.
I have kind of a crush on Marc Maron.
Do you?
I do. This is Marc Maron is the creator of the WTF
yes.
podcast, which is about comedy, which I wasn't actually expecting to like as much uh-huh. as I did.
Have you listened to the most recent episode with Mike Kaplan, I think?
Yes, there's one more recent than that.
Oh,
just
okay.
Today,
because he's vegan, and yes, I was just starting.
Yes, he eats honey.
Boo.
Yeah. doesn't care yeah. about bees. He even said so.
I just started listening to that on my way over, but I haven't finished it yet.
Yeah, it's a good one. I just really like how Marc Maron is, like, you know, he's kind of this public figure. He's had, you know, moderate success in his career, I uh-huh. think. He just, like, disgorges all this, like, hugely personal yeah. information and, like, totally doesn't care. And I think that is so awesome in
yeah.
this age where everybody's so obsessed with, like, privacy on the internet and,
yeah.
like, don't let anybody ever know your last name. And, like, and he talks about, you know, like, having sex with this woman who lied about having a husband and then the husband contacting him. And, like,
these well, on the other hand, on the other side know. Of the coin, you have people like, you know, John and Kate plus eight who are
true.
Like, everyone must know every little detail about every bowel movement I have.
But they're so dishonest about it. That's the
yeah,
thing.
That's
like,
true.
All that reality shit, it isn't real. It's
that's
all
true.
Just totally...
Marc Maron
dishonest.
Is real.
He
is raw
real.
And honest.
Like I
and I hope he listens to this episode because
yeah. oh, I bet he will.
I could use the boost.
Well, I keep meaning to write him an email mm-hmm. because he apparently reads all the emails
yeah.
that he gets and responds to them. And
let's write him an email. Let's.
You
I
think?
Mean, not right now because the internet's broken. But
yeah,
we should. I wanted to write him an email too because
yeah.
I was listening.
Should we hit on him?
I had a bunch of episodes saved up, and I had to go in for a very extensive... God, how many hours was it? I think it was something like 3 or 4 hours
mm-hmm.
of oral surgery.
So,
yeah, it was horrible. And so I was totally having a WTF moment, and I wanted to email him about that, because my dentist has... He's got, like, TVs up in the corner so you can, like, watch TV while you're getting worked on. And
mm-hmm.
they play these, like, nature videos, which I guess are meant to be relaxing and whatnot. And so the video that was playing when I was in there for hours and hours and hours smelling my own teeth burning and my entire skull vibrating with the drill was like a video of Australia's Great Barrier Reef. And... it would just have, like, underwater shots of, like, a fish and then a caption of what that fish was. So, yeah, I'm, like, watching these fish float around. And then,
how serene.
Yeah, yeah. And I was there long enough that the video looped, like, 3 times.
Oh, wow.
And there was this really grotesque part where, I'm trying to remember the exact phrase it was, the little subtitle that came up. It was just, like, this kind of floating, you know, shapeless blob of faintly pink things. And it was something like... coral spores forming a mucus raft. And I was like, what the fuck? I gotta tell Marc Maron about this, because I'm listening to his podcast right now. And then, like, a few scenes later, they show a giant clam.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my god, no wonder, you know, because I've seen, like, the little clams, like, they farm, you know, up in Washington or whatever. And
right.
I'm like, those look like dicks! I don't know why they say clam is, like, a word for vagina, but the giant clam, I was like, oh yeah, that's a vag. That is a big, giant vagina. And so it's, like, kind of, you know, opening and closing. It looks like the vagina is kind of, like, breathing. And then all of a sudden, it's, like, giant clam. And then the subtitle changes. It's, like, giant clam ejecting sperm. And it's, like, whew, it looked like I don't know if I can describe it. It might, you know, like, search on YouTube for giant clam ejecting sperm. And I was just horrified. It was like, imagine...
You're such a prude.
Imagine... Well, let me describe it to you, and you can tell me how much of a prude I am then. It looked like an asshole ejaculating sperm underwater. And I was just like, I'm never going swimming in the ocean again. So I wanted to email that to Marc Maron and be like, dude! And I was going to find it on YouTube and like include the link and be like, this is what I watched while listening to your podcast and smelling my own teeth being drilled up.
I had a total WTF moment.
It was a WTF moment. So maybe I'll send that to Marc Maron and say, hey, listen to episode 36 of the Cosmopolitan Hour because Jordan has a crush on you.
But I mean, I'm a married woman and I'm not really going to do anything.
Okay.
I'm not going to stalk him or try and convince him to have coffee with me and then tell him I'm separated or something. I'm happily married.
Well, you guys could have coffee together and shit your pants together.
That's true. I'm not so much into shitting my pants. I
even if it's really good coffee?
I am going to order some of that coffee. Awesome. I want to try it. I just, like, the propaganda has worked. So yes. If Just Coffee is listening, then...
Just coffee.coop.
Yeah. We're going to do Marc Maron's promo for him.
God, we don't even get anything out of this.
I know. We really should get sponsored. I think the GoMax Go should sponsor us.
They're following us on Twitter.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Or Sweet and Sarah. I'd be happy with Sweet and Sarah following us. Oh, I really want some marshmallows right now.
I'll tweet about it. I'll say, hey, GoMax Go.
Sponsor
the Cosmopolitan Hour. Send us candy bars every week so we can go fly into a sugar frenzy.
Yes.
And talk really fast.
Yes.
And then no one will understand the podcast.
That's kind of the point, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Either that or like a beer company.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get sponsored by both, kind of like how Marc Maron has Just Coffee and Audible.
Yeah.
Like, one week we can, like, drink way too much and do a podcast, and then the other week we can, like, get really high on sugar and do a podcast.
Yep. We could get a dispensary to sponsor us.
Yeah.
Get that really would high be entertaining. On something else.
Yeah.
People would love listening to that.
Oh, man. I have such amazing deep thoughts when I'm high. It's awesome.
Yeah, I haven't had any of those deep thoughts for quite a long time. But,
then you're overdue.
Yeah.
They're all collecting up there. You just got to unlock them.
I just
them.
Have to let them out.
Yeah. Got to let it fly.
Oh, dear. I've probably gotten contact highs from working at the office I work at, where there are a number of medical marijuana users. Who are rather liberal with their use.
I came across a medical marijuana user at Gelateria Naya, although I don't know if she's allowed to be smoking at work, but...
Oh.
Bam. She let that stop her. Her eyes were redder than the prickly pear cactus sorbet.
Oh. Nice one.
Yeah.
So, what do you think?
I don't know. Did you want to talk more about Marc Maron? Or have you sufficiently covered why you're in love with him? He's a cynical bastard.
He is a cynical bastard. I don't know. My one hesitation is that he seems like he's not, like, he's a small kind of guy. Like, he seems like he's like, pictures, he doesn't look like a very big guy. Which goes against my type.
Because
I've had a few bad experiences with guys who haven't been much bigger than me.
You're a short hater, man.
I don't hate them. I don't know. It weirds me out a little bit, and I know that it's not cool of me. I know that it makes me shallow dick of a person, but, I don't know. I'm sure it speaks to some, like, deep-seated psychological trauma.
You were run over by a clown car filled with circus dwarves.
Yeah, or
a young child.
Yeah, or I have, like, fucked up daddy issues or something.
That reminds me of two things.
Yes.
One, I'm trying to remember where I was. It was somewhere on my road trip. I was behind somebody in a car that had a bumper sticker that said, "Short people rule." And at first I was kind of laughing, but then Pranjal pointed out, he's like, well, at least they, like, embrace it, you know, instead of, like, going out and buying a Hummer. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool, I guess.
Yes.
You know, they embrace their shortness rather than compensating for it by destroying the environment.
Yes, and I don't mean to disparage short people. It's not that I don't like short people. It's
right.
Some of my best friends are short people, okay?
Sure, sure.
But, no, I mean...
Sizest.
Heightest. I'm such a jerk. People are going to get mad at me.
The other thing I remembered was I was getting all caught up on The Soup yesterday because I love Joel McHale. And he's going to be at the Mandalay Bay at the end of the month in Las Vegas, and I kept seeing posters for him everywhere when I was there, and I was just really upset that I'm not going to see that. And I was really upset I didn't get a picture next to the poster, because you can't take pictures in the casino. Although I managed to get a picture of myself with the poster for The Thunder from Down Under, which is Australia's premier male strip club, or strip troupe.
Nice.
We didn't go see it, although I really wanted to. But yeah, I was catching up on The Soup. And I guess there's a new program, probably on TLC, because they seem to be obsessed with dwarves for some reason, mm-hmm. called Little Chocolatiers, about this dwarf couple that run a chocolate shop. And
so basically, people doing their job.
Yeah. And they just happen to be dwarves. Yeah, TLC has this really strange obsession with little people.
They
I don't know why. They've got that family show about Little People, Big World or something Then they've got...
They've got The Little Couple, which I quite like.
Okay.
Because a lot, I think like everybody else, I think every other couple or every other family in those shows is like religious. And I think...
Yeah.
I don't know if they're atheist, but like they certainly don't seem to be that religious. Like she's a doctor and stuff that. And she's like the...
And I think they've got, I don't know if it's on TLC, but it seems like it would be a good fit, you know, with their dwarf obsession. That show about dwarves and pit bulls.
What?
I know, it's like, what? Yeah, there's dwarves and pit bulls. I think it's called Pit Boss, but I'm not sure. That might be another show.
I've heard of the show Pit Boss. I was not aware that dwarves or little people were in any way featured.
So anyway, now there's this new show about little chocolatiers. And
there's actually another one. It's called the... I can't remember. But it's about this, like, this couple who are both little people. And they had an average-sized son.
Okay.
And so they have, like, a normal-sized baby. And they're both little people.
And
it's about them.
Huh. So they show this clip from Little Chocolatiers, and it's totally one of those clips where you have the greatest amount of sympathy for the people in the situation, but at the same time you're like, oh, why did you have to show that? And there's this guy in their shop, and he's kind of like, he's giving them this kind of like bemused look, like, you know, he's just this typical, like, middle-aged white guy that's got to, you know, like, middle-aged waspy white guy who's just like, I've got to show that I'm okay with this and approve of this, you know? Like, I'm going to be the black guy's friend. I'm going to go talk to the black guy at the party or, you know.
Right.
So he's in this shop where these dwarves are working, and he's giving them this bemused little approving glance, and he's like, how long have you guys been working here? And the woman, I think she can sense where it's going. She's probably gotten this a lot in her life. She's like, well, we've been working here about 8 years since it opened. In fact, we opened it. We're the owners. And he's like, he says, I just think it's so great that you midgets can make chocolate.
What?
And I was just like, what? Oh my God. And
what did they do?
They were just like, bitch, please. They just gave him a look.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I think it's so great. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's the best.
Yeah. So, I mean, they got that guy's approval. They can go to sleep tonight.
Yeah, totally.
They're not going to be tossing and turning thinking, you know, that guy that came in, I'm just not sure if he's okay with us midgets making chocolate. I really wish he'd said something about how he felt on the situation. I'm not going to be able to sleep for like the next 3 nights thinking about this fucking jackass.
That's kind of incredible.
Yeah.
You
got to love those people that are like, I recognize that I have the privilege and the power in this situation. So rather than just, you know, ignoring it, I'm going to own it by giving you my permission to exist.
Right.
That's not how it works, dude.
Now I really want to watch some, like, little person TV.
Yeah.
I wonder if anything's on TLC.
Oh, I'm sure there's always something on.
There's, I,
I got to preview another TLC show. Oh, I told you about this a little bit yesterday, but at the MGM Grand, they do, like, test audiences for TV shows. Mm-hmm. So we decided to do it because, you know, there's not much else to do in Vegas unless you have, like, you know, $50 to spend on drinks. And we watched a show called, tentatively called, From Inedible to Incredible, about, it's basically, like, what not to wear except for food. And this chef who's allegedly really famous, and he's got the ego that he's famous, although I've never fucking heard of him, he comes in and he teaches people with really shitty cooking skills how to cook properly. And I think you would have enjoyed that episode because the woman was from, she'd grown up in the Yukon and had all of her food as a child, like, basically airdropped, and it was all, like, powdered milk and powdered eggs, and they didn't have any salt, and, you know, and she just made this horrible stuff. And my favorite dish of hers that she made was hamburgers with cornflake, strawberry cornflake breading. And it had been, like, fried in, you know, like, an inch or two of oil until it was charred because she was, you know, she didn't want people to get parasites from the meat. So that was pretty awesome. Although, although, you know, then he comes in and teaches her how to cook properly, and it's all like, make lamb burgers instead. So I had my little dial where you could tell them what you thought of it. And every time they showed a close-up of meat, I brought it down to zero. And then there was another moment where he gives her an apron and he said something about how, like, when your man comes home, he'll be so happy to see you. And I was like, zero!
Patriarchy.
Indeed.
Who needs it?
Nobody.
Yeah. Well, that sounds almost as good as a midget show.
Yeah.
So, here's hoping that they pick that up and air it.
Well, maybe, you know, if it's popular enough, maybe they'll do a spinoff, like, you know, from Little Inedible to Little Incredible mini edition.
Yes. You know, I really wish that we knew a little person. I actually have a friend who's a little person back up in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. But I would actually really love to do an interview with somebody about, like, why the fuck is everybody so obsessed with how little people live?
Have him send us a dispatch.
Maybe I will. Maybe I will try and do that for him. He's,
You said he has, like, some awesome scooter or something.
Yes, he has. I think he might have, like, waved at us from across the street when we were visiting in Edmonton. I can't remember. But he was one of my drinking buddies back in Edmonton. He hung out at the record store that I worked at all the time. And he was a cool dude, but he had, like, a vintage Vespa. But he, like, modified it himself to make fit him. Because he was, I think, you know, 4 feet, maybe, probably less. But yeah, it was just such a non-issue. Like, you know, he hung out and, like, it was just a... It's so bizarre to kind of see this fascination because it was just really not an issue at all, totally. You know? So, I don't know.
Yeah, I actually, when I was in Las Vegas, I saw some people abusing scooters and I was very pissed off by it. I mentioned it was Easter vacation, so a lot of school kids were out, but it was also, like, you know, spring break, so there were a lot of college kids in Las Vegas. Right. And there were these total asshole bros that were, they all had they all had, like, you know, 2 gallon cups of margarita, and they were tearing through the New York casino on those little rascals that are for, like, old people with limited mobility.
Right.
And they were, like, speeding through the casino and, like, doing these sharp turns and trying to do, like, wheelies and stuff on them. And I was just like, it just pissed me off because, you know, like, just the sight of bros, you know, makes me angry. You know, a backwards baseball cap is enough to, like, raise my blood pressure. And then, you know, the fact that they had drinks in their hands, I knew shit was going to go down. And I was just, like, getting ready to fight. I was in that zone. And then just to see these, like, totally healthy, totally privileged, you know, asshole fucking frat boys on these, you know, things that are provided for people who aren't as privileged, who aren't as mobile.
Right.
It just made my blood boil because, you know, and specifically because in places like Las Vegas, my mom needs one of those because she has very limited mobility.
Right.
And so, like, seeing those guys, you know, like, just think that it was really fun. And, you know, like, I got freaked out because they were driving so fast that, you know, they could have, like, hit a kid or something in a crowded casino. And, like, if my mom had been there, they could have, like, knocked her over and seriously hurt her because she can't, like, jump out of the way, you know?
Right.
I got so mad, and I was just, ugh. I was ready to, like, walk up and punch one of them in the face.
You should have.
I should have, indeed.
Why didn't you?
Wayne Newton held me back.
Ah, Wayne Newton. It's always Wayne Newton.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there were some class acts when we were in Vegas. Carrot Top.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, Carrot Top was at the Excalibur, which is where we stayed. Chris Angel was doing a show with Cirque du Soleil, and they were pushing that one hard on us. They kept giving us, like, you know, 2-for-1 coupons for the tickets, and we're like, no, we're, no. You couldn't pay me to take a Chris Angel ticket, sorry.
Oh, so I guess that means it wasn't doing so hot.
I guess not.
Good.
And then, you know, the Thunder from Down Under.
Right.
They had that Renaissance dinner show at the Excalibur.
Nice.
But we didn't go because I don't think they had many vegans in the Renaissance.
Right. Right.
In the medieval era.
Vegans were developed a little bit later.
Yeah.
Well, I think you can blame Wayne Newton for that one, too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Definitely. Oh, Barry Manilow. Barry Manilow was at Paris.
Oh.
Paris, France.
Nice.
And the Osmonds. The Mormon Osmonds. Therefore, we have come full circle. The Mormons in Las Vegas. The Osmonds.
We have come full circle. Yes. That's a nice circle.
And I still don't give a shit about Jesse James screwing around.
Yes.
Whatever. All right. Well, so
with that, should we blame it on Wayne Newton and sign off?
Blame it all on Wayne Newton. We have some exciting episodes coming up. I don't know how much we want to reveal.
We might have an interview with somebody that...
Yes, who writes a certain anti-vegan website.
Yes. That's all we will
say. And we'd like to get some more interviews with some other awesome people, so...
Yes, we would.
Yeah. And I want your friend to send us a dispatch.
All right.
What is with the media's obsession with little people lately?
Yes.
All right.
What's with that?
Yeah, and feel free
to
weigh in on
that. What's the deal with that? Can you put a picture of Seinfeld at the very end?
What is the deal with that?
Your Seinfeld impression's better than mine.
I'll have Pranj, I'll do it. He does a pretty good Seinfeld impersonation.
Okay, as long as we have some Seinfeld at the end.
Yeah, and maybe Ira Glass can take us out as well. And if you'd like to weigh in on Wayne Newton or Mormons or little people, you can send us an email at thecosmopolitanhour@gmail.com.
And you can check us out at Twitter, or on Twitter. We are at, is it The Cosmo?
We are at The Cosmo Hour Pod.
Good.
And www.thecosmopolitanhour.com, which just takes you to our old blog. But maybe someday we'll have a really fancy website. If someone wants to do that for us, that would be awesome. Yeah! All right.
This episode was produced by Erica and Jordan, edited by Erica, and recorded by Erica and Jordan. Special sound effects by Pazuzu the Cat. Keep up to date with The Cosmopolitan Hour online at www.thecosmopolitanhour.com. Today's episode would not have been possible without underwriting from Vietnamese Tofu Sandwiches, who believe...
Well, they really believe that, you know, the people that are running the town are divinely ordained by God to be a prophet.
I'm Ara Glass. Thanks for listening to The Cosmopolitan Hour.